You're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. Hello everyone, my name is Yara. You're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. Wherever you are in the world, I hope you are happy and healthy. Thank you so much for tuning into the show.
Peace!
Positive
energy,
activity,
constant
elevation.
Today's show is focusing on the act of gardening. Brits have gone wild for gardening over the last 2 years, but has this newfound passion gone bloom or bust as some normality is restored? New research by sustainable beauty brands Weleda reveals that a huge 9 in 10, that's 88% of us, with an outdoor space remain committed to gardening, planning to spend the same, if not more, time being green-fingered this summer. And 2022 is seeing new trends sprouting, with many now having birdhouses, that's 68%, and bug hotels at 41%, in gardens, while 43% have created a place to seek calm and solitude with their own restorative mental well-being spaces at 43%. Two-fifths, that's 38%, have even successfully grown plants from seed, with 15% talking to them to help them flourish. According to the data, over a quarter, that's 26%, took up gardening to support the environment, but few are aware that their efforts could be actually helping UK's rapidly degrading soil. While nearly half are aware of soil degradation, only 21% are aware of the scale of this issue. In fact, most, at 52%, don't even know what soil type they have in their own gardens, which is also a common cause of gardening failures. I have some special guests with me today, interviewing Frances Tophill from BBC Gardeners World and Claire Hattersley, Weleda's biodynamic gardening expert. Frances has joined Weleda's Save the Earth Skin campaign to raise awareness on the importance of soil and provide simple steps that we can all take to protect it. Just like the human skin, soil is a living, breathing ecosystem, which is vital for the future of our planet and everyone who lives on it. But it is being destroyed 10 times faster than it is being created. An essential factor in climate protection, healthy soils store 3 times more carbon than the atmosphere. But a third of the Earth's soil is already degraded, and every minute, roughly 30 football pitches of fertile soils are destroyed. Now, without this soil, we are running out of healthy organisms, resources, and water stores underground. Gardeners World Frances Tophill has joined Weleda's Save Earth Skin campaign to raise awareness of the importance of soil and provide simple steps that we can all take to protect it. Frances says, protecting soil is the key to successful gardening. Without healthy soil, our plants cannot thrive. And one of the best ways to protect soil is to keep planting anything from herbs, flowers, vegetables, to shrubs, to trees, to hedges. And try planting all year round to keep your soil busy and healthy. Frances advocates getting out into your garden and getting your hands dirty. It's good for you and the planet.
But the earth is our mother.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. It is a pleasure to have you on the show, you two.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely.
Now, my first question for you both, I have traveled to Japan. I don't know if you two have ever been to this beautiful country, but in Japan, gardening is actually a lesson that is taught in schools, you know, and the young people will grow their own food and they'll serve it to each other within their cafeterias. Now, do you believe that gardening is a lesson that should be taught within UK schools? And what benefits do you feel that could bring to young people?
Well, I mean, how enlightened to make it part of the curriculum. Yes, I passionately believe that all children should have an opportunity to learn how to grow their own food and also learn a little bit more about their contribution to the environment and how they can actually improve the situation. We're in quite a dire disconnect, I think. So, yes, schools have such an important role to play. Some schools do gardening lessons in the UK, but yeah, I think there's a lot of forest school going on at the moment, but maybe not necessarily so much actual cultivation and growing vegetables. What do you think, Frances?
I completely agree. And I've been really active through my career of trying to be a voice for advocating gardening in school, whether it's a lesson-based thing or just an activity-based thing. I'm on the fence about, because I know for some children, lessons and learning can even just in itself be an alienating concept. But to have the experience of being outside and growing is a hugely valuable thing for children. There's so many benefits that it has. And I've seen this myself with my work. That, you know, if a child is possibly struggling in a classroom environment, then being outside in the open air is just a refreshing place to be. But also it's a massive confidence builder for a lot of children who aren't as academic. And I've seen children who have really struggled in classrooms, then suddenly leading the gardening group and teaching the younger children how to do things and finding that inner confidence that they are enough and they are good enough. Whereas a lot of times schools can be very, very alienating and destructive on children's confidence if they aren't academic. But I also passionately believe that making it in some way part of the curriculum benefits those children who are academic and maybe pushed more into a scientific role or a mathematical role or feel that pressure or even want to go down a more academic route. But actually, it's so important for those children to feel that connection with nature and learn about the amazing world that we live in so that they can then go on to be the plant scientists and the environmentalists and the conservationists and the botanists and you know, even the pharmacologists and anyone who, but with always that underpinning of how valuable the natural world is and how we need it so badly. So I think, yeah, hugely important for absolutely everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you two. I don't know if you're aware, but I actually teach forest school stuff and I teach bushcraft and survival skills within woodlands. And I feel that young people, they've almost lost a sense as to where their food comes from. You know, like one time I had to tell a young person where bacon came from. They weren't aware that it came from pigs. And I feel that gardening, you know, it brings forth the whole process of growing from seed to plant. And for young people to actually see that and participate in it with their bare hands and be outdoors is a very, very powerful, powerful lesson. So what can we do to, you know, encourage that gardening could be implemented in schools?
Good question.
I think a lot in a lot of these spaces it involves a very actively engaged adult like yourself, but whether it's a teacher or a parent or a governor or a TA or someone like that, or even I've known children's grandparents come in and volunteer in their retirement and start building it. What we really need, there's a few things we need. Space for growing, and a lot of schools do not have that space. So it's that building of connections with other places, councils that can provide some sort of area of land for people to engage with, but also, yes, yeah, somebody to be driving it. And even sometimes I have seen school gardens driven by a pupil. But then when that pupil leaves school, or when the parent of a pupil leaves school, if it's the parent, we need that longevity. So there's some amazing projects that are teaching the children, the young people, to have that ownership over the space and come up through the school system with a continued sense of ownership so that when an older child leaves, a younger pupil can take over and run it. So I think that's key. It's legislation, it's space, and it's somebody, or hopefully lots of people to just drive the project forward and explore in whatever way they feel is exciting to them.
That's a really good answer. I guess it comes down to that, you know, famous Gandhi quote, one of my favorites, be the change you wish to see. And, you know, we can all create our positive ripples within our own environment and communities.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So the whole process of gardening, it gets you outdoors, it gets your hands in the mud. And, you know, it's well known that mud actually helps support your immune system and being outside is very beneficial. I mean, how do you personally believe in your journeys that gardening can support in mental health and well-being?
Well, I having worked in the Willida Garden for over 20 years, we've had quite a lot of gardeners coming through. We have seasonal gardeners and we also have volunteers, and we have a lot of our co-workers come out from the offices and come and help in the garden. And I'm absolutely convinced that there is a benefit just for being outdoors, listening to the bird song, just breathing fresh air. But there is also a lot of kind of chemistry going on. So the soil actually has, there's a friendly bacteria that actually has an antidepressant effect, similar to the antidepressants that sadly people kind of become quite reliant on. So there is actually a mood enhancing aspect to working with the soil. So yeah, I think just the whole kind of sensing that goes on in the garden, the colours, the smells, the movement. You've got to be gardening, you generally have to be active. So it's the perfect counterbalance to being sedentary, sitting, watching the telly or sitting at a desk. So yeah, just for me, lots and lots of evidence that gardening and being outdoors is so beneficial.
And I would agree with all of that. I think there's something very, very instinctive, deeply instinctive about having your hands in soil, being connected to soil. And soil is such an important backbone of, you know, growing of the ecosystem at large, of global regeneration, hopefully, which is why this campaign of Save Skins Earth is so important, to just to focus on that soil. But there's also another thing, which is light levels. You know, there's so many people who suffer so much with SAD, the seasonal associated disorder. And I heard a thing a while ago that in even a very well lit office, which is designed to be as bright as possible, it's some very, very low thing like 200 lux or something, whereas outside on a dull day it's 10,000 lux or something. And that light is so important in helping our mental well-being. So I think there's so much going on that engaging with just being outside and hopefully with your hands in soil can bring to us all.
It's exactly the same when you're in woodlands. The trees are releasing this enzyme phytoncides, and when you breathe that in, that increases your natural killer cell productivity within your body, which is like cancer fighting cells being produced. And it's just amazing how the human psyche and brain and body changes when within nature. I mean, in our everyday lives, you know, we're surrounded by a lot of artificial frequencies, a lot of sounds, a lot of distractions. And I feel when you get the human, you know, back into nature, you're kind of retuning yourself back into the natural rhythms. And I think it's fantastic, you know, that you're raising this awareness and encouraging both young people and adults to spend more time outdoors. And hopefully that, you know, that love that people have for their own, you know, habitats can spread beyond the fence as well. And that love can be shared towards our ecosystems and our habitats that we have remaining within the UK.
Can I just add as well, I think it's only in building relationship with the natural world that we will then take care of it. If we don't have that relationship building in the first place, then we won't really consider any sense of love and care for it. So it's imperative to spend time out in nature.
I think you just hit the nail on the head there, Claire, you know, because you know, our world is made up of what we see, right? So what we're engaging with every day, that's creating our reality. So it's so important, you know, to find that balance between the modern and the natural world. Now, I'm really interested to find out more about the soil health and condition within the UK. Would you two mind please sharing a little bit of your knowledge about what's going on with that, please?
Well, this is kind of the incentive behind WILEADER's Save Earth Skin campaign, because the soils across the world, including the UK, are being damaged. It's where we do intensive agriculture, we're mineralizing soils. People are paving over their gardens, they're putting decking or concrete over their soil, and the soil dies. So there's a lot we can do to actually support the soil organism. Soil is alive. Healthy, healthy soil is full of life. So one teaspoon of soil contains billions of different organisms, microorganisms, and it's just this beautiful biodiverse kind of ecosystem. So the more we can actually take care of those soils, with agriculture, we can take on board regenerative agriculture. So we've got organics, or we've got biodynamics or permaculture approaches, anything that kind of breaks away from the reliance on these nitrogen fertilizers, which actually mineralize the soil. And then in our own gardens, we can actually bring the soil back to life. So there's so much we can do. And WILEADER are really hoping to support home gardeners in making the right choices, looking after the soil in their gardens, but also thinking about what they can do with their purchasing power as well. They can support a kind of different approach to looking after the soil.
Frances, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think just, well, all of what Claire has said is so valuable. But also, I think as gardeners, and I know because I have attempted to garden on a really impoverished soil. I had an allotment a few years ago that was in the middle of the marsh, which theoretically is incredibly fertile, drained a long time ago for arable land. But because it was a really old allotment and I had a very bad problem with horsetail, somebody in the past had spread some pretty nasty chemicals around to try and get rid of the horsetail. And that was the main focus. It was a very sandy soil. It drained very quickly. It was absolutely dreadful. And the only, you know, way that you can get successful growing is to start at that very basic level of building up your soil. I grew some things, but they were always small and not very impressive. And I think that a lot of gardeners, particularly people like allotment holders who often now are new to gardening, they're just coming into it. And if they have a really bad crop or something fails, it can really knock their confidence and make them not want to continue with that journey of engaging with nature. So for me, I think it's that importance of gardening, of soil, sorry, for our gardens, having a healthy soil, building it up, not digging it too much, not double digging. I used to stand in my allotment and watch all these other usually retired men double digging their plots, and I wouldn't. And you know, just embracing that structure that's there enables such healthy soil and healthy plants. So it's a really lovely thing to sort of start with as the very basics for gardening is engaging with your soil. How can you improve it? Producing your own compost, or even buying it if you haven't got the means to produce your own compost, and adding it to the soil. So I think as a gardener, that respect and appreciation for soil is hugely important.
I feel that, you know, when you're gardening, you're giving your energy back to the earth, you know, and that process. I mean, everything in nature is an exchange of energy. Everything's like this transaction, and you're creating a connection in so many different ways when you are working with the land. But I'm going to be really honest with you both, right? I mean, gardening is fantastic. Like it creates community. And I'm finding that it's grassroots and communities and people on the ground that are creating these positive movements. But then sometimes it starts from the top down. Now, right now, people on the ground, you know, there's a lot of campaigning to protect bees and our pollinators and to discourage the use of these pesticides that can harm bees. But then recently, you know, the government has just granted a bee killing pesticide into the UK. Now, it's a conflict of ideologies. You know, it's like you've got everyone trying to save the bees and protect the environments, and yet the government is still allowing these pesticides to come in. How do you personally both feel about that? And what do you feel should be done in this situation?
So, yeah, I'm aware of this because I think it's to do with the sugar beet industry. I think there's one particular pest that decimates the sugar beet. And of course, sugar is a big industry. On a personal level, yeah, I just share the same shock, horror, disbelief. What I think is interesting is more and more people are aware and talking about the challenge of actually making it a policy. I think it's people power again. I think people have to petition and shout and again, do what they can to help the bees in their own gardens as well.
I would agree with all that. Again, speaking purely on a personal level, I find it very, very sad and very, very frustrating. I get really angry about it, especially when you hear lots of people in power saying that they're doing all that they can and they're not actually doing anything. What is the solution is the million-dollar question, to which I do sadly not have the answer. I really hope, I like to think that, like you say, working from grassroots organisations and the bottom up will be the thing that makes the big change, that we can all collectively put our voice to something and be heard. But it feels sometimes frustratingly like that is not the case. And I suspect that's why there's a lot of political and social unrest globally, because of those structures that are in power. So I don't know what the answer is. I just have to feel hopeful that somehow we will find an answer and be heard.
I feel your fire, Frances. I can resonate to where you're coming from. I mean, when you're highly connected to the natural world, seeing these movements, and they're coming from a place that is disconnected, right? And if we think about humans and how we've dwelled on this planet for thousands of years, for a very long time, humans worked in connection with the land and we work together with nature. And today we seem to be operating as if we're either above the laws of the natural world or not a part of it. So for people on the ground who are, you know, really in tune with these habitats and in touch with the environment and wildlife, of course, it can feel overwhelming, you know, but you're right. We have to hold on to that hope. And you said it, Claire, you know, most of the changes throughout history have come from people on the ground, right? And we are so strong when we join our forces together. That's where the beautiful ripples occur. That's what I like to believe anyway, you two. I'm going to hold on to that.
Good for you. Good
power to people. Now, since lockdown occurred, I feel that people and communities, they've naturally gravitated towards the natural world for their mental health, for their well-being. I mean, what shifts have been occurring statistically with people and the use of their gardens, would you say?
Well, Walida have actually commissioned a survey because we were curious to see how lockdown had affected people's approaches to gardening. So we did a survey last year and we were curious what kind of things people were growing. And the survey we did recently this year was really, are people still continuing to work in their gardens, to be committed to improving their environment, their own individual environments? And we found that 9 out of 10 are actually still gardening, which is just so brilliant. It's really positive. And they intend to spend more time in their gardens than last year. So I think, again, we can see there's a shift change in how people are just recognising the benefits. We also found out wonderfully that 46% of people are making their own compost. Now, I don't think the stats were as high last year. So I think, again, people are recognising that they can recycle their own vegetable waste. They can do their bit in their own gardens to improve the soil, to improve the environment. And again, 38% are growing from seed, which I think shows a kind of confidence. People can actually think, I can actually grow plants to eat without having to go to the garden centre. So it's a much more sustainable and more rewarding approach to their gardening. And one of the lovely statistics that came up is 15% of people are talking to their plants. So I thoroughly approve of that. I think it's all about relationship building and getting to know the soil, getting to know your plants and just having a dialogue. Why not?
There's lots of stuff that's been found by this research, and there's some lovely things, but like 50%, more than 50% of people find that gardening helps their mental well-being as well, which is really, really vital. And this is Mental Health Awareness Week, I think, is it not? So that's just a really lovely thing to tie into that, you know, in a time when we've all had a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of worries over the last couple of years, both financial health worries, you know, loneliness, that being outside makes us all feel better. And I just think that's a really lovely, lovely thing to come out of this research.
I always talk to my bonsai tree. I love talking to my plants. I feel, again, it's a positive exchange of energy. And I don't know if you two have ever come across this machine once, and it was a special type of machine that allows you to talk to the plants, and you can hear the frequencies and the sounds that the plants are making. Have you ever seen that?
I have. Yes, I've heard of musicians also working with plants in a kind of exchange and creating music. And yeah, why not? I mean, we just know so little.
I've done one of those things where you can tap into the tree and hear all the xylem and the phloem and all the liquid moving around the tree. And it's just amazing. So active. You know, when you go into a forest and you'll know this, that you feel, I always remember reading it in The Lord of the Rings, is it? When they're in the woods and they feel the trees are talking.
The Ents.
The Ents. And even in all the other woods where there aren't the Ents, in every single, it's obviously something Tolkien very firmly believed in. And I get that feeling that we're a part of a community that's communicating in some way when the wind blows through and they sound like they're angry or you know, but now we know that, of course, that they are communicating a lot through the soil, through the mycelium, through all that sort of biology, that ecology that goes on beneath the soil. And we now know a little more about that plant communication that's happening. We don't understand quite how it happens yet, but that's all, for me, more of the magic that we know so much that we don't know, and that's all done through the soil. And that, isn't that amazing?
It's fascinating, isn't it? And we've literally just only tapped into this world that's right below our feet underground. You know, it was Suzanne Simard, forest ecologist from Canada, right, discovering that symbiotic relationship.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I did play my didgeridoo to the plant. And what was amazing is the plant imitated the same tone that was coming out of my didgeridoo. That was a really beautiful thing to experience.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. That sounds fabulous.
It was. I will never forget it, honestly. It was like this connection with this plant. And I mean, you know, we walk past trees and plants every day and we don't really look twice at them. It's only when you kind of implement the knowledge of the plant and its use and its benefit that it then changes your perception. And I find the very same thing with bushcraft, you know, like say, for example, the silver birch tree, right? Like I know that this tree is medicinal. I know that this tree has many uses. I can use it to light my fire. And that when I've put that knowledge in, now the silver birch, it's changed my perception. And I feel it's the same with gardening. You know, you're giving your energy to this plant. It's a whole learning process within itself. And a great man once said, you know, look deep into nature and you will understand everything better. Now, there are patterns found in nature, aren't there? Like you notice the patterns on the ferns and the flowers. You've got different geometric patterns like the flower of life and the Fibonacci. Have you seen the beauty of sacred geometry in nature, you two?
Yes. And one of the absolute pleasures of working with biodynamics is that you kind of have to be aware of moon rhythms and planetary rhythms as part of your day-to-day gardening. And so I'm very aware of the what are called the Venus patterns. So where there's five-pointedness, so five-pointed stars, five-pointed patterns in, say, the rose family, that is the work of the planet Venus. And it's just adds such an extra dimension to when you're gardening. Instead of just looking down on the ground and at the soil, you take into account the planetary movements and where, what the moon's doing. And if you sow your seeds before the full moon, you get much stronger germination. I mean, all this kind of approach, this interconnectedness, is something that's underpinned Walida's approach to growing plant ingredients for their medicines and for their body care products. So it's like, it's just part of what Walida does, which has always been one of the joys of being a gardener for the company. And interestingly, what you were saying about the silver birch, we actually have used silver birch in our products for over 100 years. So we recognize the medicinal benefits of the birch tree as well.
I think for me, I have a very strong memory of this realization of the patterns of nature when I was a student up in Edinburgh Botanics, when we did our fern walk around, and I got so fascinated by looking not at the shape of the leaves, but at the patternation on the underside of the leaves of ferns. That's for me a lovely way of really engaging, is that kind of real close study of plants. And people never get my obsession with ferns. I love mosses and ferns and, you know, selaginellas and all these, as they're called, lower plants. How terrible that we've called them that. But there was one I particularly remember called Todea barbara, which is a tropical fern. And the underside of the leaves is this incredibly intricate sort of embossed pattern. It's so stunning. But loads of plants have them. And then the way that the spores are arranged, and that's obviously just ferns and mosses and liverworts and things, but the whole world of flora and also insect life as well. If you get really close up and personal with your garden, you find incredible. I found some dreaded rosemary beetles on my rosemary the other week, but what beautiful insects. I can't ever kill anything like that. I just took them off and threw them into the compost and hope that they found something else to eat. But yeah, the closer you get to nature, the more you get to notice beauty and patterns. And it's a never-ending world of fascination.
Frances and Claire, thank you so much for your time. I mean, we've ended on some beautiful notes, bringing up the whole network and connection. I thank you both for your energy and sharing on the Environment and Conservation Show. Bless you both.
Thank you.
Frances, I'm not going to lie, I feel your love for ferns and moss. I love squishing moss, you know, it's like a sensory overload thing. And I bet I'm not the only moss squisher in the world. I know my moss-loving brothers and sisters out in the world. I know you hear me, fellow moss squishers, but you know, there are some who have taken it too far. As in, I did hear that an ancient, beautiful woodland found in Dartmoor, that people were foraging the moss, but to the point where it is damaging the ecosystem there. Now, that's where we have to be careful, you know? We have to be responsible foragers. What we take from nature, we must give back. This is one of the laws of the natural world. So please forage with care and responsibility if you are going to go down that path.
If we don't stand, who will?
When is enough enough?
Now, there are different types of UK soil. So you've got sandy soil. It's gritty and it will crumble easily. It needs plenty of added organic matter, such as compost, to retain moisture and to feed plants. Then you've got the clay soil. It should roll up easily in your hand and stay in shape. Digging in plenty of organic matter and a little grip will help make clay soil more workable. And then you've got your loamy soil. Loamy soil will roll into a ball easily. However, it won't keep its shape as well as clay soil. Loamy, however, is perfect texture for planting. Now, to share some further statistics with you listeners, despite the rewards, almost a third of people in the UK find fruit and vegetables the most challenging thing to grow in gardens. Almost half, that's 46%, say the increased cost of living means they will be spending more time gardening. To help keep costs down, almost two-thirds, that's 61%, use recycled materials. Half, at 46%, make their own compost, while over a third grow herbs for cooking, that's 37%, and also have solar-powered lights at 36%. Over half, at 51%, say it has a positive impact on their mental well-being, and 48% find growing plants rewarding. A third, at 33%, have had trouble growing plants but aren't sure why, while 43% of people welcome worms in their garden as they know they are good for the soil, and only 10% of Brits check the health of their soil regularly. Planting trees is another fantastic way to protect soil. Trees support soil health. So Weleda will plant a tree for every Weleda skincare food product sold in the UK from April to June this year through its partnership with the charity Tree Sisters. I'm a big fan and supporter of Tree Sisters. More power to you. Head to Weleda's Save the Earth Skin homepage for more information on how you can support soil health and join the mission by getting dirty in your garden this summertime. The research and statistics I've shared with you today is the research of 2,000 UK respondents who have a garden or outdoor space. That research has been commissioned by Weleda, conducted by Opinium 2022. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Environment and Conservation Show. My name is Yara. If you would like to connect, please visit www.wildeyeadventures.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay blessed, everyone, and catch you next time. You're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio.
We need to understand as human beings that we are part of this ecosystem.
We are nature.
In the forest.
I teach many people, you know, don't cut the trees.
It's through their roots because of the relationship they have with living microorganisms.
They do lots of really important things in our ecosystems.
And there are cycles, natural rhythms, this planet that we're so interconnected with.
We really need help. The Amazon really need help.
I'm Bia Sharma, almost 50 years.
The indigenous need our help. They need our help now.
Medicine.
Wild Botanic Garden. It's actually floodproof, bombproof, and radiation proof as well.
There's young people out here that are doing amazing things, and the press needs to fix up and start telling some really beautiful stories.
We can always make a difference.
We be the change.
Plant trees! They help us breathe!